Open up your ears and open up your mind. They'll reach into your throat and pull out your spine. And when the sun blows up and the earth is gone, you'll still experience grind with Kyle and Sean.
Good.
Sean's hype.
No, that's got to be the maximum of my energy for the entire show.
I'm just hype.
Just kidding.
I'm very hype. Are you?
You're really hype?
I really do, honestly.
Okay, I'm really hype. I'm really hype too.
Phil, are you hype?
I'm kind of mid, I feel.
You're kind of mid? Well, I am hype, honestly, because I'm excited to talk about this flick today. Number one, as always, it's our third week where tradition on, we have Phil as our guest. Hi, buddy.
Hello.
And Phil, as always, brings us a Jean-Claude Van Damme flick. I did literally believe you called an audible like 2 days ago, though. I was ready to watch Assassins. I was like, all right.
I mean, I felt it would be a search engine appropriate.
Optimization. It would definitely get boosted up.
But not even the attempted assassination of a presidential candidate can stop me from watching a Van Damme movie. So we are going to go forward as planned with Desert Heat / Inferno / Coyote Moon, whatever this movie was called.
There is not a single JCVD movie that centers around some attempted assassination.
That's what I was Well, I mean, technically the one from last year is, it was a terrorist attack on the vice president.
Mm-hmm.
I guess so.
At the Stanley Cup Finals because he's a huge hockey fan.
I mean, I will say, like, I will say that my first note, like I said off air, I have a ton of notes, half of which I probably won't even mention, but I have a ton of notes for this movie. And the first one is, these JCVD movies have some of the most batshit beginnings to anything. What is this? I feel like that's the case with like all of the movies that we watch for this. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if there was some assassination plot, it probably would have started with like JCVD, I don't know, arm wrestling a bear in the woods or something. So I think this was just a little too out there in the desert for that.
I think a dirty secret with me is that I haven't watched most of JCVD's filmography simply because
I love it.
After the late 90s, in the middle of the late 90s, things dropped off a cliff real hard, and I have not really explored much of it afterwards. It was really, I'm curious here, because before we recorded, Kyle, you had mentioned that you had a few JCVD movies that you were hoping that I might select. I'm guessing Desert Heat wasn't one of them.
It was not one of them, but again, I'm glad that you have bucked the trend, have, you know, surprised me, because I was expecting Time Cop, which you called out, and you called out the other one I was expecting.
Universal Soldier?
Universal Soldier.
Yeah. Which should be, like,
I've seen both of those.
Yeah, and those are the blockbusters, those are the kind of his peak from 92 to 95 or so. When he was his most marketable, and this is kind of our first foray into the beginning, the other side of that slope, where things are starting to come off the rails a little bit, but we're not quite there.
So I'm curious, with these movies that you've done previously, you know, in the pre-Sean days and the ones that we've done now, and you're getting into some of these JCVD movies that you're running out of the ones that you've seen and really enjoyed over all of these years. Are you really excited to be exploring these movies that you haven't had an opportunity? Well, not even necessarily an opportunity, but a want to watch due to, you know, what we just said?
This one I'm excited about because it is just so batshit out there. Like, it is such a bizarre throw everything, comedy, action, romance, mysticism at a wall and see what sticks. It's was such a pleasant surprise the first time I saw it, because this was one of those, you know, back in the early 2000s when all the blockbusters were going under and you could buy VHS tapes for $1 at like random pawn shops. This was one of, you know, hundreds I ended up buying over the course of my 20s and had no idea what it was going into it. And it just kind of hits you over the head with a 2x4 with just every character actor that you could find, all each trying to overact and out cartoon each other. And yeah, no, this was a delight. There are some not so good ones. What came to mind after you did the first week with what was the Jet Li movie that you guys did?
Jet Li. Unleashed.
Unleashed. So there is a Van Damme movie called Replicant where he plays a kind of childlike adult, similar to Jet Li. The plot is Michael Rooker is trying to hunt down a serial killer played by Van Damme, so they create a clone of him who is an adult in physical stature, but is a child in mind. And they're trying to see if they can kind of probe this childlike Van Damme's brain to predict where the serial killer is going to strike next. Michael Rooker, who has some very personal ties to the serial killer, does not like him, so he mistreats and abuses the replicant of the serial killer. No. And it's just bizarre and kind not in a good way like this one is, but that's I think 2003, 2004, kind of further pertinent on that downslide. It's weird, but
I'm pretty sure that's not how that works.
I like the idea that that is just tailor-made for the acting chops of somebody like Van Damme to carry such a role of to play an innocent child, you know, and have it come across.
He really loves playing multiple versions of himself. There's at least two or three different movies where he plays dual roles of himself, and I'm not sure any of them are particularly great. I mean, we did Double Impact, and while that is fun, it's not exactly a showcase of Van Damme's acting chops.
No. I would have liked to see him play the Danny Trejo character in this movie as well. Now that could have been something.
Johnny Sixtoes. Oh, man.
Could you imagine if Rhonda and Dottie were both Jamie Presley?
I can't, we'll get into it, I'm sure.
It's just twins everywhere.
I don't know. I figured too, like, you know, we do have some playful banter. I did have one thing I wanted to discuss with Phil, but I knew also this is going to be a banger episode, fellas. So
yes.
Yeah.
But my one curious question, Phil, I know is that we're all trying to record early, but you're going to a Ren Faire, right? You've been getting more active in Ren Faires, I think, right?
I've been participating with a troupe for the past 5 or 6 years, kind of weaseled my way into their good graces. They're called the Rat Catchers, and it is a game of tag that facilitate. We sell rat catching licenses to kids or adults that they pin on their shirt, and then we send out people with rat masks on, and the people who have licenses are charged with running, chasing them down, and tagging them, and they get a bead for their efforts that they can string on a necklace at the end of the day. Sometimes the beads are plague beads, which means you got to go back to the rat catcher's nest and get a cure in the form of a piece of candy. And nice. It's just a very fun
That's awesome.
Way to keep the kids active during the Ren Faire, because Ren Faire is really just adult shopping. It's a weird cyclical market where most of the vendors at Ren Faire are selling different trinkets and articles of clothing to further enhance your wardrobe for future Ren Faires. So it's kind of an Ouroboros of commerce. But the kids don't really get into it that much.
It's a self-circulating cycle.
And this keeps the kids active while the parents drink plenty of ale and shop plenty of clothing stores.
Is this something that goes on for a long time for you guys? Because I actually saw first thing this morning, you had posted a couple of pictures from a Ren Faire. I'm like, oh man, I cannot wait to ask him about that. And then you had mentioned that you're going after this. So is it usually like a week-long thing in the summers or a couple of day event? Or is it like multiple ones that you guys go to?
We primarily do. There's one nearby in Silverton, Oregon. It's about 30 minutes from where I live in Salem. It's the last two weekends of July every year. It's been going on for about 12 to 15 years. It's one of three that are in Oregon, but this is the main one that we do. And you can camp out there if you want. I'm going out there to set up a camp because it's just kind of easier and nicer to stay the night there after the workday and wake up the morning of. The vendors who travel up and down the coast, because there are people who do this professionally. We just do this as because it's fun. But there are professional vendors who, you know, every week they're at a new Renaissance fair, a new festival, a new whatever. And this is their living, their primary living. So they will camp out there for the week and just chill out in between shows, in between festivals. But for our all intents and purposes, it's, you know, we're there for Friday or Saturday and Sunday. And then I come back home for the week and then head back out there again next week.
Nice.
That's incredible. That is one thing that I wish in this area that it was more like locationally viable. I know that there is one in August in this area, but even like where I was living prior to this, it was like a 45 minute to an hour commute. And at this point, it's closer to like an hour and a half. And so that's just kind of a little out there for me to plan for. And it's only like a 1 day event.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish there was more, especially in like the Northeast, different things like this going on, because it always looks so cool. In the photos, it looks dope. The photos that you posted, holy shit. Like, I just wanted to be there. Even if I'm just being hawked a whole bunch of different garb, I would be like, hell yes, let me get some of that. So next time, I don't look like such a bum wearing stuff where I don't really fit in.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, there is rental garb there. If you really want to dress up and you don't have the full costume, you can go find a rental garb place and go that route. For me, I've been doing this for 10 years or so. And just every single year you buy a new thing, you buy a leather belt, you buy a shirt, you buy, a pair of shoes, whatever, a potion bottle to wear on your belt. And you just kind of accumulate garb and accumulate trinkets over the course of your participation.
That's really sick.
I love that you do things for the kids there, because I think that's huge, because I'm sure, especially in this day and age, like keeping kids engaged in anything is got to be almost impossible. But I would be like the rare 1% of kids at this thing that would like love to be there, because I was so huge into knights and like squires and the idea of like chivalry from like 7-8 years old. I was super into, I would read books at the library on knights. They had like those giant super in-depth picture books with like details of like what knights wore and all of their gear and shit. I loved all that. So I would be super into a Ren Faire, but they never were around when I was a kid.
The shows,
even like looking back, I would want to do that as a kid, but even like right now when we're in Vegas, one of the casinos has like a tournament of kings or whatever, where it's you sit down, have dinner, and you're watching the jousting and stuff. That is eventually on one of the trips to Vegas. I'm doing that. I don't care. That's going to be one of the nights. Pun intended.
Have either of you guys done Medieval Times?
That's kind of what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
No, I've done it twice. It's a lot of fun, dude.
Is it?
Like, it's crazy how hype you do end up getting. Like, I was with like a group of friends and we were all pretty laid back, but they put you in like a colored section. There's like six different knights, each of a different color.
Yep.
And when you're in that section, you get like a little flag, or at least they did back in this day. And like that is it, dude. Your knight, when he comes out and he's doing well, dude, you are going nuts. Like even people that are the most laid back, timid people, they're like, yes, cut his head off. It's crazy. It gets you on like this primal level. It's nuts.
Man, I get hyped just watching The Cable Guy when it gets to that point, you know?
It's very similar to that. And poor Janine Garofalo as the disinterested waitress is also very accurate. Sir, we don't have utensils. Do you want a refill on your Pepsi?
They have, so good. That's another interesting part of the whole Renfair circuit are the traveling jousting troops, because there are multiple ones that contract out with different Renfairs in Oregon, Washington, California, whatever. And they all put on different shows. The one that's been working, the Canterbury Renaissance Fair, that's the one in Silverton, for the past few years, it's very WWE almost, where it's super exaggerated. They do have like five or six different sets of knights, each representing a different nationality. There's, you know, the French, the English, the Scottish, the German, you know, whatever. And then they do some jousting. They do some lance accuracy kind of things, and then they have kind of a big melee at the end of it where you know, they're clanging, they do choreographed, you know, fights, but it's all very, you know,
it looks really cool
WWE style kind of you know, exaggerated attacks, and someone
not pile
ends up,
drivers,
yeah. But yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's hot, but you know,
yeah,
whatever,
that's
it's,
so sick.
It's fun. I enjoy it.
I would too, man. I mean, people that do that, they're obviously dedicated too. Just like, dude, if you go to an amateur wrestling show, it's fucking awesome because those people just love it so much that, like, I don't know, it, like, the ability to just let loose and buy in is something. Some people just poo-poo for snob or whatever reasons, man. There's people that would not want to watch a medieval fighting melee because they're think it's lame, but that sounds fucking badass, dude.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if you're gonna be that person, I don't know, maybe just stay home.
Or I don't want to hang out with you. You're gonna be a fucking stick in the mud. I want to cheer and yell to some dude, cut his fucking head off. Come on.
Yeah, let's go purple. Let's go purple.
You don't get to do
He's
that
the
every
rich
year.
One.
And as you kind of pointed out, oh, yeah. picture-wise, like, it is a great opportunity to do some candid photography of just everybody decked out, because there are so many different cool outfits. And while each Renfair technically has its own time period where it's supposed to, like, take place, you know, you're supposed to be dressed in 15th century Elizabethan era garb, but, like, you know, you get knights from, you know, 500 different years of span. You get people from Middle East or Asian cultures kind of dressed and mixed in there. You get Vikings. You get, like, everybody who's just has their own
kind
of...
I imagine you get, like, elfish-style things as well, right?
Lots of fantasy, lots of Zelda, lots of just whatever, you know, fairy wings. It's just kind of a really fun exhibition for folks who want to just get out there and put on some really cool costumes and walk around and shop and people watch and eat giant turkey legs and drink mead.
I think fucking awesome. The best thing about Renfair people is that they've probably been gate kept from most things in their life, so they're real open to, like, everything, dude. Everybody's mm-hmm. real chill, real friendly, just super nice, swell fellas.
And I think we're at the point where just, like, nobody really gives a fuck, you know? You like what you like. If you're going to be there, have a good time. And also appreciate every time that you're on, Phil. We like chat and learn more about something different, whether it be the D&D crew that you have to this. Like, I enjoy this.
Got to figure out what to bring to the table next time.
Would really turn some heads at the Renfair if somebody showed up on a sweet steed of a 1957 red Indian motorcycle.
Yes.
Right? Get that segue?
That was nice.
Ham fist it.
Yeah, saw where that was going, and boy, did you stick the landing.
Mm-hmm. Holy shit. So we joked kind of briefly earlier that the intro of each Van Damme movie gets a little more out there. And absolutely, this one is the most out there. And also, like, the most abrupt. You don't even know it's the intro till, like, the movie's literally just starting.
Yeah.
His motorcycle just dies like 2 minutes into the opening credits.
Then he's like chugging tequila and shooting off a pistol and talking to somebody that's not even there. He's suicidal. Then all of a sudden, he's getting shot and like being left for dead.
He is capital crazy. A acting in that scene. Mm-hmm. He is, God bless the man. Oh, man. He is trying his hardest to be a one man show. And you know, he just doesn't quite have it. I appreciate his effort. He's always trying to kind of push the boundaries of his abilities. And I don't think he's got the capacity to do it, but you know, bless him for trying.
Yeah.
That's I mean, giving up the full ghost here.
Mm-hmm.
I fucking love this movie. I've watched it twice now. Because this is a bad movie.
It is.
But I fucking love that. And that
it was, dude, not a good movie.
And it's so fucking bad. Oh my God, it's so good. Like, as much as I liked the last weeks where it was like a bad good movie,
mm-hmm.
No, dude. This is the high art I crave. I am so in love with this movie, y'all. Phil, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh my, it has so much. It has so much of everything. Oh my God, dude.
I'll also bury the lead here. This is my favorite JCVD movie that we've watched, that I watched down. For this show.
That's impressive. Without a question. Because I remember last year, Sudden Death had kind of taken that spot on the podium for you guys. So it gets knocked down to number two at least.
Sudden Death still has like that big budget push behind it where like it's still, and they had the number one thing I will say about this movie is you can tell how much push Van Damme still has. Mm-hmm. And with the smaller budget, there's no big budget people there to tell him no or redirect him.
Yeah, I think the big difference is Sudden Death felt like cohesive. It felt like somebody was really driving a through line here. And watching this movie, it's just fucking ape shit just going on at every given moment. Like, dude, you got, what's his name, Jubal? Like, his entire arc through this
Mr.
movie
Miyagi?
Is the most, yeah, is the most insane thing in the world. Like, from him just sitting there, like, waiting for Birdie to show up, to next thing you know, he's saran wrapping people and dump trucking off the side of a freaking cliff. Like, what? This movie was insane.
Yeah, Van Damme had so much push, he pushed the director out of the film and got him to take his name off of it. This being the director of Rocky, of The Karate Kid, of Lean on Me, John Avildsen.
Stop.
This was the last movie he ever made, and he asked that his name not be included on it. And so there's a ghost director, Danny Mulroon, is who is credited. Although at the very end of the movie, then it just says like a John Avildsen film. So he didn't even get his wish to get his name taken off
bastard.
Of it.
That
but he was
bastard.
He was so upset that Van Damme like got to make his own cut that took precedence, that he was like, no, I don't credit me with this, please.
And you gotta feel
his
like
name? Appleton?
Avildsen, Avildsen.
Okay. So if this came out with the Avildsen cut, if this was 2024 and the Avildsen cut came out, in a year people would be crying for the Van Damme cut.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I'm here for it. Push it. Upvote that on Reddit. Let's go. Get me that cut.
Phil, I feel we're gonna have to should we just get the rough overview and we can interject and talk about all of these? Because, man, it's such a trip, dude. It's so fucking good.
We can do that. So, rough overview for those who have not seen Desert Heat, and I'm not sure how you could not have such a well-known straight-to-video movie after the bombing of, I think, Knock Off, starring Van Damme and Rob Schneider. Double Team, starring Van Damme and Dennis Rodman. There was one other one, but essentially his late 90s work was just bombing and losing money. So when Sony bought the rights to this one, they didn't even give it a release. They just went straight to video. And this
so
one
this
is
for the folks who haven't seen this.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you haven't seen this, actually just pause. It's free on Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. You got to watch a little bit of ads, but it's free on there. Just type in Inferno.
And yeah, it's credited as Inferno, it's credited as Desert Heat. I'm not sure where the difference is. The Avildsen cut is called Coyote Moon. And they really press the coyote symbolism all over the place in this. This movie is a retelling, an homage to the Akira Kurosawa film Yojimbo, which has been remade and redone to death. This is one of three Yojimbo remakes that came out in the 90s. One I have seen. It's Bruce Willis, Last Man Standing. Takes place in 1920s Prohibition era America. One I haven't seen, which is Rutger Hauer, and it's in the future, and he pits two rival robot clans in a robot war against each other, which I only learned about literally like 5 minutes before we started recording.
I like that one. I've not seen it, but I want to.
Let me pull it up here. It is called Omega Doom. 1996 American
badass
sci-fi film directed by Albert Pune, starring Rutger Hauer. The story, set in a dystopian future, concerns a robot warrior who, during a nuclear winter, plays both sides of a robot civil war in a small town.
Huh. I think it's notable to say, too, with you mentioning that, Yojimbo gets a shout-out late on in the movie, and this actually, this makes it make sense for me.
Yeah, yeah, they kind of, if you didn't get it, they spell it out to you at the very end of the movie, but yeah, the basic
bash
plot
over
of,
the head with it.
Basic plot of Yojimbo, of Last Man Standing, of Desert Heat, of Inferno, of Coyote Moon, is two warring gangs in a small kind of rundown town are interrupted by a lone traveling warrior who comes in and pits them against each other and ends up cleaning up business. In this version, Van Damme plays a soldier who is returning to his friend Johnny Six Toes, played by Danny Trejo.
Who is supposed to be a Native American?
Native American.
There's a lot of really weird casting in this movie.
So I was... dubious about that at first, so I did some research, and he is a native Mexican indigenous tribe called the Yaqui, so that was actually spot on. I'm used to seeing Danny Trejo play Mexican parts only, so I was a little bit thrown off that he was playing a native part, and we'll get into some of the racial things later in this movie, which are a bit bonkers, but that one was actually accurate, so I'll give him a pass on that. But yeah, he is going to deliver. He is on a suicide run. He is sick of the memories of the wars that haunt him. He's tired of the killing, tired of the death.
The wars, Johnny.
So he goes to return this 1957 Indian motorcycle to Johnny, and it breaks down in the beginning of the movie. And he gets drunk, starts firing off his pistol. He's talking to a hallucinatory Danny Trejo, and he ends up being accosted by Walt, Larry, and Igner from Futurama, and these three brothers who... The first one looks like Discount, Kid Rock, just the lamest trio of villains. I have a hard time with these guys. Yeah.
Yes, the worst I do as
part,
well.
They are completely in the right, by the way. A drunken Jean-Claude Van Damme almost killed them, shooting wildly into the desert. They're right to be upset.
He was in the middle of nowhere. Honestly, what were they doing out there, huh?
They were so... Here's what I don't get. They're running drugs through the smallest town of 10 people.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's an old tourist destination. Used to be a big draw for UFO tourism that is no longer drawing tourists in. They have
God damn it, this fucking
they have a diner in town. They have a pawn shop. They have a bar, a biker bar called the Bombay Lounge. But not a whole lot else going on there. But
no.
But yeah, so anyway, they accost Van Damme. They take his bike, they beat him up, they shoot him in the chest, and they leave the youngest of the brothers, Petey, to finish him off. And Petey, you know, bless his heart, he just can't do it, and he fires two shots while they have their backs turned. They think they kill him, but Petey spared Van Damme, shot into the ground, and that's going to come back to haunt them later on.
You know, all the way by themselves in the desert. I guess they did have some place to go, but they just they couldn't just walk over and be like, all right, you did it, Petey. They spend all this time loading the fucking motorcycle and never look. Oh, I love this movie, man.
Meanwhile.
So, yeah, they load up this fucking motorcycle in this truck.
Yeah, meanwhile, Dottie and Vern come by. Apparently this dry lake bed is a shortcut from the interstate to the town, I think is said later on. But Dottie's played by Jamie Presley. Vern is played by Kevin West, who you might remember as the insect scientist from Biodome. That's where I know him from. But they work at the local restaurant.
They are both trying to out-act each other the entire movie.
They are going for it. And we come to town, and we learn that there is some rival gangs going on there. The Hogans, the three brothers, and their father, played by Larry Drake, pretty you know, out there character actor. But they run one side of the gang, and then I honestly don't think I ever heard the name of the other gang.
The heathens.
They're the bikers. They're the leather daddies that hang out at the Bombay Lounge. And they have a tentative truce. They work together to sell drugs. But Van Damme survives. He is saved.
Again? Who are they selling drugs to?
Yeah.
We don't know.
Because Marge and Howard, they're... Actually, Marge might be on drugs. Marge is definitely on drugs. The way she sings and dances with them large snakes and, like, needs depends.
Mm-hmm.
So
I also... And I really appreciate, just to dip back real quick, the way they emphasized who the bad guys were, because the one guy has the shirt that says Got Meth.
Petey.
So that we know, like, oh, these are the bad guys. I also love, in these movies, the drug dealers pushing the cocaine are the bad guys. But, you know, between each take, Van Damme is just snorting massive rails. And he sees himself as the good guy.
Yeah.
Where the fuck? Oh, so they show up in town.
I
enjoy how Johnny Six Toes rescues him.
Yeah.
Go on.
What are you saying, Sean?
Oh, I was just going to say I enjoy how this month there's a heavy theme on extortion, small local business extortion.
Yep.
Bunch of sharks collecting their upkeep. It is especially hilarious in this one where they're holding up the church and they're holding up Eli's Emporium, which is not selling any merchandise, so they're literally taking a cut from almost no sales.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty funny.
Yeah, the Hogans are running the town with an iron fist. Mm-hmm. The three brothers, they're shaking down every business for money.
Max dad working in the pawn shop. His name also Lester in this movie. If you guys have watched Always Sunny in Philadelphia, it took me the second. I was like, I know this guy. And it took this one for me to put it together. He's Max dad on Always Sunny.
Those were one of the two brothers.
That gets killed in the pawn store. Yeah, the inbred brothers.
Yeah, because there's the three brothers, the Hogans, and then there's the two brothers who run the pawn shop who get promptly killed. You know, as much as Van Damme is haunted by the killing, fuck, he loves killing. He slips right into it quick. He
just dives right back in on that switch.
I like how, like, whenever anybody in this movie, like, nobody bats an eye at death in this movie.
Not at all, dude. Not at all.
And they're Did you kill that guy? He's like, yeah, I did. Do you know Leo and Lester? I did. But what is that line? He frees Eli, and Eli's just like, let's kill every motherfucker in this town.
Are you going to kill him? Oh, good. Jesus. Jubal is just like disposing of, but he says he's a handyman. Where does that say? Oh yeah, I'll throw bodies in a pit.
That is my question too. It's like he's looking for a handyman, but he's just a body disposer for some reason. And he's got even a lined up line of some spick and span, a little elbow grease, several yards of saran wrap, and everything will be good as new. Good as new. It's like, what?
I really love that line.
The people here, all the characters in this town, nobody acts normal. Everybody is just kind of this bizarre caricature of a human being from the motel owners, Howard and Marge, to Jubal, who is played by Pat Morita. I took the handyman thing as a kind of a nod to the Karate Kid, where he was the handyman at the motel that he worked. And considering Karate Kid was directed by Avildsen, I assumed that was a little bit of a nod there. But yeah, he's a handyman who's wearing like a white seersucker suit, who sits in the diner every day reading a 50-year-old newspaper about Pearl Harbor while waiting for his wife, Birdie, who hasn't been here. He's been waiting there for 3 years for her, and he's just happy and chipper and repeats himself multiple times when he talks, and just a bizarre character who is immediately outdone by the whiskey-drinking, Depends-wearing, snake-owning motel owner, who is outdone by the old man who smokes cigarettes between taking drags off of his air tank and wearing red underpants like coveralls. And it's who's outdone by Vincent Scavelli, who is doing a very, very over the top Indian accent while wearing slight brown face. And it's just nobody here is real, and it's bizarre.
I feel like we could do 5 or 6 separate episodes literally just talking about each character in this movie, because like we don't have the time to do that, but I so badly want to break down, like, there's so many little things and little quirks about every one of these characters that I find so fascinating and so absolutely hilarious. For me, like Marge, oh my fucking god. I love Marge so much in this movie, but like every single one of the characters in this movie is out of this world and just so funny, man.
Yeah.
I'm surprised we have any scenery left after all these guys chewed it up.
Jesus.
Dude, the boss of the Heathens motorcycle gang is just, he screams literally every line and is like pushing his neck out like he's taking a giant shit.
His name is Berserko. I don't think it's said, but he's credited in the credits as Berserko. My love for you is like a truck, Berserko.
Berserko.
Then who's Ives? Is Ives the underling there?
Probably the better known guy. Because I've seen that dude and stuff.
Is he the one that got killed when he got like Hurricane Ronad? Like wrestling move Hurricane Ronad and his neck snapped?
Yeah, like real quick, okay. And then he gets his hat back.
Yes, yeah. I think
so. They had a hard time, I felt, with the underlings, and even I guess with a lot of the major characters. I had a hard time knowing who was who. They didn't do a whole lot of saying the names, to the point where one of them's like, "Yeah, let's kill Ramsay," and I'm like, "Who's Ramsay?" And it turns out he's the dad of the Hogans, and that's like the only time we hear his name.
I had to keep scrolling up on my notes just to fill in the names that I learned later on. Like, I would be talking about characters and then 20 minutes later scroll back up and be like, all right, that was that person's name. Definitely wasn't, didn't know that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here we are. And I feel like, did Berserko die? Sorry, this is jumping ahead. Did Berserko die off screen?
No, he's the one who got killed with the snake.
Yeah.
Okay. That was really quick, and
thanks,
blink
Marge.
And you miss it.
She saved the day.
Okay.
But yeah,
everybody chips in.
As usual, we're jumping all over the place here. So kind of getting back to it, Trejo saves...
Back to the beginning.
Back to the beginning. Trejo saves Van Damme. He pulls the bullet out while a coyote looks on in front of a full moon. Again, the coyote symbolism, they're hammering you with it. Then he gives Van Damme...
How's he really saved the day, Phil?
What's that?
How's he really saved the day, Phil?
He gives him just the broiest foot rub.
With oil!
With oil. He's, you know, he's removed the bullets, he's poured tequila, he's sang his whiskey song, and then he's just talking him up and giving him a very casual hetero foot rub, and I'm all here for it. It's great.
I love Van Damme wakes up at this point, and he says, I feel like a football. Because he has so many stitches. Dude, he had one tiny bullet hole.
Yeah.
And like when he pulls it out, that did not look like a 45. That looked like a 22.
I couldn't even see what he pulled out.
That's what I'm saying. But he's
like I thought it was maybe a fragment or something.
He also had taken off Van Damme's pants, even though he wasn't shot in the legs at all. He was definitely not wearing pants.
We'll come back to this.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
I think that's just how bros, we're bros in the military. I've never been in, so I can't say. But
yeah.
Yeah.
But
friends
the...
listen to Endless Love in the Dark.
Friends rub each other's feet with oil.
Six Toes comes up with a plan to divide and conquer, just like the old days. Gives
like
Van Damme his hat. We get a little sequence where they're broing out on his desert hut and some... like F-15 flyovers happen because there's a military base nearby, and Van Damme
jets
walks
are
in.
Cool. I've also written down Chekhov's jet, but with a question mark because it doesn't really have much of it. It's so stupid.
It's not great, but it does come back. You do get that payoff for the jet.
It's one of those that comes back, but it didn't need to.
No.
Like, it was just added because, hey, let's pay that thing off. But then when you think about it,
jets are cool,
it's like,
right?
It didn't matter in the grand scheme of the last scene.
So as you hit these on my story notes, I'm going to drop in my notes I've written down.
Please do. Yeah. Van Damme walks into town to retrieve both his gun, his Desert Eagle, and his bike. The gun is held at the pawn shop, the Emporium, by Mac's dad and his brother, who have tied up their uncle Eli in the back and are running the shop and snorting cocaine and running credit card scams on tourists. And Van Damme kills them both in short order. They kind of started it, but Van Damme quickly kills them. And then heads to the diner, gets a slice of Rhonda's famous apple pie. Some very heavy flirting goes on, and
I will interject really quick here. As they're all watching him walk to the diner, at that very moment, I must say, boys, my heart went da da da, because I felt it in my loins. I was like, "Let's go! This is about to pick up." I was very excited.
We get some
shots
at this very moment.
I wrote down, falls for Rhonda at first sight, but better bang some whoas first.
Yes.
We'll get there.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. We get the introduction to Marge and Howard, the motel owners, who are dubious of him. Howard's like, well, what if he's a rapist? And Marge is like, well, then we rent him a room.
Marge is weird AF, dude.
And she's just like chugging whiskey.
Gets paid off after?
Yeah.
Weird.
After some heavy flirting, Van Damme recruits Jubal over to come dispose of the two bodies. And again, Jubal is just like, there's two dead bodies here. Okay. Whatever. And again,
not
Lester.
Not bothered at all.
Lester, who these were his two nephews, also is like
Eli.
Eli. Eli's like, this is fantastic. I love this. And granted, they did tie him up and were starving him in the back. But again,
was there a bathroom there? I was curious because he's been there for 2 months, right? So they've been bringing. Why didn't they kill this guy?
Oh, that's not where you're going. Okay. So I was going to say, thinking that as well. Like, did they let him up to go to the bathroom? Because his foot was only asleep. But also, like, around this time in the movie, Eli asks, what's his name? Eddie, what are you going to do right now? And he goes, oh, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go take a shower. And then everybody comments on how nice he smells. And you've got Eli for the rest of the movie wearing that one shitty little onesie where you can see his tiny little Hank Hill bottom, which was automatically going to get a 2 on the butt scale from me.
Oh, like, buddy.
Not even including what happens later.
Oh, like, buddy.
Man, that was like a tiny little Hank Hill booty. Hey, like, is Eli not going to take a shower? You're nasty,
I love this,
old man.
Dude, the setup of this Rhonda Love storyline that literally just happens because it has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even needed in this movie.
No, it's not.
It is such an afterthought, and like, it's hinted at in the beginning, and then it's such an afterthought for the rest of the movie until the end of the movie.
Well, it's immediately devalued when he goes back to the hotel room later.
Yeah.
Everybody was horny. Especially Marge.
Oh my god, dude.
With her straw in her whiskey bottle.
Van Damme ends up going to the Bombay Lounge to go confront the Heathens, the other rival gang. Says he's from the Hogans, says he has been hired by the Hogans. Shoots three of them. Takes two of the women that were being assaulted. And rescues them while, again, a very racist caricature of an Indian man played by Vincent Scavelli, famously of Ghost. If you don't know the name, you know who he is. You have seen him before. He is the character actor of character actors. He looks like he lives on methamphetamine.
You just said his name, and I don't know his name.
I love
Vincent Scavelli. But I know who he is.
My favorite...
I love... Oh, go ahead.
I was saying, my favorite role of his ever is Death to Smoochie, where
he
plays.
Oh, he is in that.
And he's got my favorite line, just a one-off, where he goes, hey, sorry if I smell like piss. You know how it is.
That Death to Smoochie has my favorite line is, of course, Rainbow fucking Randolph, when he says, don't be like me, kid. Keep your dignity. Oh, my balls.
Before we get too far away from this, I've got to ask you guys. So when he meets Rhonda, and I thought this was kind of a funny scene when he introduces himself and Eddie Lomax, and she goes, yeah, I'm Rhonda Lomax. Uh-oh, Reynolds. And over there is my dad, Billy. Man, every time until she introduced him as Billy Reynolds, every time he appeared, I'm like, that looks like Burt Reynolds. Either one of you had that thought, because that's all I could think of. And when she said Billy, I laughed out loud.
No, I didn't think Burt Reynolds, but I was like, it was another one of these. Like, everybody in this movie is somebody I've seen in a movie. And I was like, fuck, who is this guy? I've seen him in something.
It's got so
he did
many
look very
actors.
Burt Reynolds.
Guy's
which is funny
is...
because he looked very Burt Reynolds, but like now Burt Reynolds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Guy's name is Ford Rainey, died in 2005, but lived to the age of 93. Wow.
So he was...
No, 97? 97? He was like late 80s. He looked like a very young late 80s.
Yeah, he looks spry.
He looks early 70s at most.
Yeah, good for him.
This guy went out on a high. He filmed this like 6 years before he died.
Yeah.
Send it, baby.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I was going to say, one of my favorite little things is this little fucking sidekick Jean-Claude Van Damme does when he pulls his gun out and shoots the first guy so that he can also get into cover, which, by the way, is behind an aluminum trash can, that somehow convinces 8 people to drop their guns.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Oh, you're talking about at the cafe, Bombay?
At the Bombay Cafe. when he does that, he like pulls his gun out and like kicks to the side. It's so fucking awkward looking. I loved it. And then he's like, come on, guys, drop your guns. And they're like, okay, because we're in a JCVD movie. My God.
It's much like at the end of the movie when he's hiding behind a blown up car for like 10 minutes right behind everybody. And I'm like, wow, really? Mm-hmm. Man, that's like the one kid on a paintball course hiding like in plain sight.
He's Solid Snake, bro.
Yeah. Crazy.
He goes back to the motel.
He rescues two chicks.
Rescues two chicks, goes back to the motel. They are having naked time. One is showering while the other one's shaving her legs, and they're just talking about how sexy and heroic he is. And
I wonder if he's circumcised.
The off lines in this movie. I wonder if he's circumcised. I don't think he's a rapist. I bet he has, like, he gets all the pussy. Like, everybody has just these weird...
Yo.
Just one-liners, you know.
But they're all about how awesome Jean-Claude Van Damme is. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. This whole movie is just an ego boost for him. Because, of course, he also bangs two chicks at the same time. Uh-huh. He answers the door while he's banging one.
And this is the most animated that he's in the entire movie. So he answers the door with a gun, invites her in, keeps the gun out for like another minute, and then like it jumps forward to Marge peering on them. She gets drunk. She's horny. And he is so animated when the door knocks and the other girl comes in. He goes, "You're up next, baby."
Yeah.
Or something like that. This is a different... character than the entire rest of the movie for no reason at all.
Right.
But I loved it. It was hilarious.
We go from tortured by the killings to banging two chicks while Marge watches drinking whiskey out of a straw, saying he's bringing joy to the people.
To the entire town. And then 10 minutes later, he's depressed again and telling Eight Toes that he doesn't have a reason to live.
Yeah.
What? But then, we'll get there. But Johnny Six Toes gives him a reason. I love it.
And at this point, the people who I was watching with, I was watching with my wife and a couple of friends, and they didn't know if Johnny Six Toes was real or if he was an imaginary character, because at this point we've only seen him interact with Van Damme, and including the beginning
of the movie.
Only
person in the whole movie.
Yeah, including the beginning of the movie where Van Damme and Trejo are talking to each other, and then when the Hogans come, Trejo kind of vanishes into air. Like, it's clear that that was a kind of a hallucination that Van Damme was having talking to him. So we don't know if he's real or not until...
Though Rhonda does say that she knows him when he comes in to get the apple pie.
That is true. So there is some acknowledgement that he does exist... he is
whether or not he's alive is different.
Right. And there is an alternate cut of this movie where he was more of a guardian angel character, and that was part of the IMDb trivia where there is a cut where Rhonda says, like, he's been dead for 10 years. So it's kind of weird. They don't do a good job of establishing that, and I felt like they took some cuts from the Guardian Angel Trejo and mixed them with some cuts of the he's real and didn't really do a good job of establishing what his role was in the movie.
It was a little column A, little column B, and the way the movie ends with him being like, oh, you can see him too, like it almost leans heavily into that Guardian Angel thing. Now that you mention that also makes way more sense as an ending if that were the case. But
yeah,
he's very Tyler Durden-esque.
Yeah.
Shared hallucinations.
I agree with your friends, though. I had the same thought. I was like, is this a real guy or no? I don't understand.
And we find out in the next scene, because the Hogans and the Heathens come to blows. The Heathens attack the Hogans and blow up their car, I guess, and then we go back to the Hogans, who have their own staff doctor.
I love their explanation for how they get away. It's just an overdub while it's like viewing the car driving at night, and he's like, when we get around the bend, get out of the car quick. So then it just cuts to them later. They're like sneaking away in the dark after the bad guys get done shooting their car.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
I was, even after watching multiple times, I'm kind of confused on that whole scene. But yeah, I guess the heathens attack the Hogans. The Hogans get away. They regroup and they go to attack each other again at this like old construction site. Sure. Where
I think it's like the heathens like base of operations or something, right?
I guess. Like, they're
all there.
It's just like storage containers and, you know, unbuilt structures and just plenty. It's a Call of Duty map is essentially what it is.
Yes. Yes.
With a zip line for no reason at all. Yeah. But we'll get there.
So Van Damme's up in, it's nighttime. Van Damme's up in a tower watching them. And Six Toes, Trejo, sneaks up on him and convinces him to start blowing things up, shooting barrels of gasoline while the two gangs fight each other. And they slowly realize as they're yelling at each other, they're having a good conversation while they're shooting at each other. And they realize that they have been put against each other by Van Damme, where the Hogans realize that Petey did not do his job, and things come to blows, and the oldest Hogan brother gets into Matt a fight with his dad Ramsey. And kills his dad, and Van Damme's just watching this the whole time. I love this
next
snap
scene too. It's literally they just have his hands on his neck, and then Ramsey just like turns his neck,
and you hear loud,
he's just like, "All right, I'm dead." Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't have like his tongue out, like ah.
Yes. Yeah. I like how Six Toes sneaks up on Eddie here. It's mm-hmm. like it's like the memes over the last couple of years where like a friend, like a male friend, will sneak up behind another male friend and get real close and just whisper in the ear. And it's like Six Toes just snuck up on Eddie and went, "Divide and conquer." It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Did that.
I love that. He fucking shows up. Literally in this scene just to be like, "Hey man, what about Rhonda? You know, get together with her, get married, have some kids." Like, where is all of this coming from, dude?
Name your first kid after me. Dude had to scale a tower to get up to where he was hiding and just goes, "Hey."
He's so interested in getting Jean-Claude Van Damme with Rhonda.
They've met once at this point, Eddie and Rhonda.
One time.
He is yeah. the guardian angel, Kyle. He's got to make sure that this happens.
Right. Hearing that now, it does make a little more sense. Why? But then, like, was him also banging the two chicks in that cut of the movie? Because it's
no,
for real. Like,
his booty cheeks were out.
He meets yeah. Rhonda, falls in love. They have like the music, the slow-mo cuts, everything, and then he bangs two random chicks, and then falls in love with Rhonda. It's so fucking.
I did forget to mention that is where we get the full on Van Damme butt, because that has to be in in nearly every Van Damme movie, and I wonder how much that was Van Damme. Like, they're pretty inconsequential to the whole plot, and that feels like Van Damme being like, "No, we need to have a scene yes. where I show my ass, where we have a sex scene."
Yo, he's like, a couple years ago, I did this movie called Sudden Death. I gotta make up for that.
I didn't show my ass so, once in that movie.
Here's my thought on that, where we still could have had that, because later on, he does bang Rhonda, she does take a shower, and he doesn't. He just stays there in his fucking t-shirt and underwear. We could have got Van Damme butt at any point in that scenario.
And if you, okay, so also if you think about this and wonder about whether or not this was his input in this, okay? Think about this. In this scene, she undresses first, and the payoff to this is it flipping around and him undressing to his buttocks. That is the payoff of that part of that scene, not the other way around. The focus is on his booty. Getting to his booty. Are we going to see it? Are we not going to see it? Are we going to see it? Ah, there it is.
Yep.
There it is.
And spoilers for the muscles category, but it's nice. It is fully toned. We get both.
Yeah.
We get 2 points for butts. We get at least 1 point on muscles for that scene alone. We'll see how more we get, but yeah.
Man, I wrote six toes twice, and I wrote, what the fuck? He's really pushing that relationship. And also, yeah. They have perfect coyote calls between each other in this section.
The coyote howls are redick. Like, it is an absolutely, somebody had a soundboard with coyote howls, much like later there's turkey gobbles for no fucking reason, and they're just hitting play, play, play.
Yeah, because I guess Trejo Sixtos says that Van Damme is a coyote, god of mischief and tricks, and Van Damme is like going around the dark. He's snapping necks. He's jump kicking people off bikes. He's got a big, happy, like, kid smile on his face. He's doing coyote calls while they're all trying to hunt him down. Sixtos sacrifices himself for reasons. He punches Van Damme and then draws the attention of the bikers, where we actually find out he is real because they capture him and they beat him up and they attempt to.
We're gonna have us a puppet show.
So starting in the beginning of the movie, when Leo and Lester died, I started a body count and I kept tabs on everybody that I visually confirmed that died. And
yeah. Okay.
And when it got to the point where you had Six Toes take Eddie's hat and then zip line down to distract these guys, I just typed in Six Toes, like, this guy's dead. And then for the next like five scenes, I just hovered my finger over the delete key. So I'm like, is he gonna though? And then, like,
yeah,
they tried to kill him like four times. They hung him. That failed. And then they just unceremoniously shot him.
This was a weird time where we depicted people dying by lynching as being asphyxiated. So when he gets dropped 20 feet and his neck just snaps and it doesn't kill him and the rope breaks and he falls and he's just like, ah, you fuckers can't even kill me right. And then they shoot him and he's still alive. Van Damme
I feel like they shot him in the leg.
Right.
Like, they shot him like a couple of times,
but
I love this movie. I don't get why they didn't kill him just with the hanging, other than it would have been hard for Van Damme.
He should have been dead four times there.
Yeah, like they needed Van Damme to take his body back. So I guess that's why, but it's weird because they do like a fake out killing and then literally 3 seconds later they actually shoot him.
Am I the only one that thought that if Eddie just gave him a fucking foot rub, he probably would have survived? Like, dude's got six toes on each foot.
I didn't even think of that, but Six Toes didn't get the foot rub. Did he?
No.
Is that how he lost the toes? Did Van Damme give him foot rubs and he...
Until they fell off?
We can't stress enough, guys. There is a heterosexual foot rub between two friends in the first 5 minutes of this movie. And it will not leave your mind the rest of the movie.
I'll never forget that. And no. Like, I don't mean that in a bad way. It was just like, it was out of left field. I'm like, oh shit. Okay, let's go.
He brings over the little spoon of the oil and he just dips his fingers in it. And I was like, what are we doing here? And then it's so great, man. I fucking loved it.
It makes me think of, I can't remember the Tarantino movie, the famous one, but where they're talking about, like, would you let your wife get a foot rub?
Oh, Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. And just, like, the conversation about foot rubs there and here is just like, no, it's just two hetero male friends hanging out, giving each other foot rubs. It's cool. It's fine. It's okay. Yeah. I love it. Like, normalize.
This guy over here won't let me kill myself unless I get his bike back. It's fine.
Yeah.
Like, this is the least of our worries.
So Six Toes dies, and Eddie and Rhonda meet for a second time, literally their second time interacting, and they are now fully in love, and they decide to head back into town to go confront the two gangs, which are now united against Van Damme, and a day passes, I guess, because it's back to nighttime again, and we're at the hotel. And Vern,
Curly Gates.
Vern, the biker, the cowardly biker line chef. He rats out. There's a $10,000 bounty on Van Damme's head, so he rats them out, and
he's Rhonda's brother.
Are they brothers?
Yeah, because when Billy gets shot, he was like, "Oh my god, Dad," or whatever he said.
Because the dad pops, he says like, "Everybody calls me Pops."
Everybody calls him
Pops. Oh, never mind.
So yeah, I don't know.
Never mind.
I thought him and so Jamie anymore. Priestley were brother sister though.
That's.
Oh, I thought they were boinking.
No, because the tourist bus driver wants to date Jamie Presley.
Everybody,
but
what was his name? Bobby? Billy? He's trying to watch Bo Jimbo or whatever. You like samurai
Yo
movies?
Jimbo.
Yo Jimbo. But yeah, we head back to the final confrontation. The two gangs shoot up the motel room that Van Damme's supposedly in. They go check on him. There is a false booby trap. They see that there was a gun rigged to shoot whoever goes in. So they all go in there and just like, oh, he's not here. And then they try and grab the gun. But the gun is linked to a bunch of grenades. And they all go off and they blow up a bunch of people. And I'm not sure what that does to the body count. IMDb says the body count is 17. 12 of them are by Van Damme.
My body count is also 17.
Okay.
Hey!
But at the end of the movie, you know, jumping ahead about 15 minutes, there is a newspaper that says 28 missing in local town. So there's 11 unaccounted for.
Okay, so I can really quickly explain this.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to go super fast. My body count, 17. Leo Lester, the three heathens at the cafe.
It's five.
Ramsey Six Toes. Samurai sword guy after the turkey gobble Bombay owner kills him.
Oh, that's right.
At least four in the oxygen tank booby trap.
Mm-hmm.
The Hurricane Rana neck snap. A guy gets choked next to the Rana guy. The snake death.
Yep.
And Jesse when confronting Jubal.
Yep.
And Matt after the flyover fist fight by Jubal or Billy or Eli or Mr. Singh. One of those guys. But what really throws it for a whirl, and I think this is where the 11 come in, because those are confirmed in the shootout at that abandoned facility that Six Toes comes from. I saw at least three people die, and I think a lot more did die, and that might account for the 11.
Yeah, there's a lot of explosions. There's a lot of gunfire. Yep. We don't see a whole lot of bodies during that, but that would make sense.
I call it plausible.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that whole after the booby trap goes off, Van Damme starts killing people. Townspeople start killing people. Vincent Scavelli does a to lure in a guy, and then cuts him open from neck to navel. And then the middle brother discovers Jubal wrapping up the body, and Van Damme shoots him. And Van Damme lets Petey go.
He did let him go.
Yeah. The church lady sicks one of her snakes. That's kind of something we didn't talk about, but she has a snake collection. She's been seen with snakes, and she does. There's this late 90s period where people would throw animals at each other. I'm not sure if you've seen Saving Silverman. There's a raccoon scene. Old school, I think there's a scene there, but it's just kind of like a comedy bit where you throw a very fake animal at someone's neck and they writhe around comedically and die or get attacked by it. But yeah, she throws a snake at Berserko, kills Berserko with the snake, and then it's morning again and it's daylight, and Matt and Eddie have the worst one-on-one fight I think I've ever seen Van Damme do. It's
easily
really disappointing.
It was terrible.
I think it shows.
Marge,
what's that?
It was the smallest snake in her collection.
I guess maybe it was venomous. That's what I was thinking. If so, it's some fast acting venom.
I thought
venom.
It rattled as it like rolled, like slithered away.
Maybe.
It was just weird. You see her with a massive like anaconda earlier in the movie, and she just throws like a gardener snake at the dude.
Very, very symbolic, you know, the church woman with the serpent.
They were all named after church figures.
Oh. Oh, the snakes were?
Or biblical figures.
Yeah.
Like, I think that one was Abel.
Okay. I didn't catch that. Good on you.
Thanks, man.
But yeah, the fight
sucked
so bad.
I think it showed Van Damme's age, because normally in these fights, you're getting a lot of spin kicks. You're doing a lot of... Okay, no splits in this entire movie. This is very, very disappointing. This is Van Damme. We expect to have a scene where he does the splits for no reason. Or maybe he does have a reason, but doesn't happen. Not even his, you know, signature jumping spin kick. He does kind of a jumping double kick, but it's cut really weird, so we don't really get to see it.
It looks terrible.
Somehow gets the shit beat out of him by Dollar Store Kid Rock, and the flyover jets distract Kid Rock in order for Van Damme to get the jump on him, kick his ass, take his gun away from him, empty the clip in a very weird kind of pose where he unloads the machine gun and embraces Rhonda, and Kid Rock grabs the gun off the ground, loads a new clip into it, and that's when the townsfolk, very similar to Roadhouse, where all the townsfolk end up shooting the boss at the end of Roadhouse, and in this case, Pops and Mr. Singh and Jubal, and I think someone else, but yeah, they all kind of take credit for shooting Matt, and that's the
end. They're so undeterred by death and killing that they're all just bickering with each other, trying to take credit for it. Like, oh, I haven't missed a shot in 20 years, and no, it wasn't you, it was like, oh my
I also
God.
Love
this
that
movie was a cartoon.
Again, for literally no reason, a man she just met, Rhonda, like, jumps in front of the bullet when she thinks she's going to shoot him. Like, and also, remember, Jean-Claude Van Damme's character is suicidal at the start of this movie.
Yeah.
And yet nobody wants to let him kill himself.
Oh, and they did express their love. They did. There is, like, an I love you. They've known each other for all of 3 days. They did hang out the day together, I suppose. So, you know, maybe there's some closeness that developed there that we didn't see off screen.
They banged on Johnny Six Toes' bed.
Uh-huh.
They have, like, cumulative of, like, 29 hours of knowing each other.
Yeah, she was ready to die for him.
I mean, think about speed. You know, people fall in love under extreme conditions all the time.
It's true, too. I shouldn't hate.
They gotta base their relationship on sex. So, yeah.
Sure.
And I did say the end, but it's not the end, because we get some cleanup at the end. The townsfolk are happy. Tourism is back, because that National Enquirer magazine says that 28 people have disappeared mysteriously. Police are baffled, even though they've literally cut two bullet shells on the ground around there. Birdie, who does exist, she comes back after 3 years, and even though she is easily 50 years old, is apparently pregnant with Jubal's child. And
if she's 60 years old, she looks 20 years younger than Jubal.
Yeah. There's Jubal is, you know, it's late Pat Morita. He's in his 70s. She's 50. She just came back that day, and he's very proudly just like, we're having a baby. I was like, I don't think it's your baby, Jubal. I think that's somebody else. But again,
I like
this whole thing.
Everybody gave that look at him, you know, like,
But again, none of these characters are real people. They're all cartoons. No. They're all caricatures. They're acting bizarre. And then we cut to the very end where Rhonda and Eddie are on a motorcycle on the flats, and they see Johnny Six Toes riding his Indian motorcycle next to him, and she's like, I can see him too! And then we cut to some really bad music and credits. The tour bus driver musters the courage to ask out Jamie Presley to a samurai flick Yojimbo, to just to hit you over the head with it that this is a Yojimbo remake. So
old Jamie Priestley, man, she's I don't know, man. She's fantastically bad in this flick, man.
I was fine with her. She was like the least cartoony of the townspeople. But I mean, that's, you know, everybody's trying to go for it. So I felt she tried to play it a little bit straight.
You know, that's a good point between her and Vern, because even Vern's character, like the turn at the end where he snitches out, it's a $10,000 reward, you know? He's a little bit slimy.
I like his jean jacket and bandana look.
Yeah. Like, the two of them are the only normal-ish characters in this movie.
Mm-hmm. And even him, like, when he's sneaking around, he's so cartoonishly, like, when he's sneaking, he's like...
Oh my God. When he's watching Eddie sneak into the pearly gates... And, like, Eddie turns around and he sees him in the window.
Of course, gives him the sly wink, because you can't ever get
wink.
Get one up on Jean-Claude Van Damme. He's got to show the audience that, nope.
Yeah.
It's like The Rock.
I know what I'm doing.
Has his win clause in his contracts. It's so like,
Man.
I got to...
You guys know how many times, like, something happened in this movie, and I then, in parentheses, sarcastically typed... I'm sure that won't come in handy later, or I'm sure that won't come back to bite them in the ass later. Like, it was so ham-fisted over, like, the grenades. Mm-hmm. When Eli just randomly tells Eddie, say hi to the boys, and it's just a pile of grenades, and he does. It was so weird.
On the nose.
On the nose. Ma'am, I love your hair. See? Not a rapist.
Great side story anecdote. My wife had stepped out when Walter, I think it was Walter Howard, excuse me, suggests that he might be a rapist. So she comes in she ends up, his wife is like, I don't think he's a rapist, just like apropos of nothing. And it seems like it came out of nowhere and it was the biggest laugh she got out of the day until... the dual nude scene, like 20 minutes so later.
I live typed the butt scene. I typed, oh, there's actual butt in the thank you scene, and there's JCVD butt, all caps. Like, it was a celebrational, like, there it is. He's bringing joy to everyone.
Bringing joy to everybody.
I was very joy filled, so much so that I straight went to the kick-ass-ometer and gave it a score. I won't tell you that score, but boys, what do you think we get into some kick-assometer ratings here?
I'm ready.
I'm here for this, boys. All right, Phil. The way that this works, I guess this is more so for listeners who are unfamiliar with this this patented score system that we developed a total of 2 episodes ago. It is a score based on a bunch of arbitrary categories that we compiled together to give you the perfect action movie. It is based on a total of 23 points. Each category has a certain allotted upper limit of points that it can receive. So starting with category number 1 is action quality, which, boys, as we know, has an upper limit of a total of 5 points that you can allot into this category.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Kyle, why don't you start us off with what you thought of this action quality?
So as we mentioned, well, Phil really spelled it out on the last fight. There's not a lot of fights in the flick. There's a lot of gunplay. And the one real big fight we get is really kind of a letdown. But there is some really nice stuff happening. They, for the limited small budget they do have, we get some explosions. Overall, I on the action scale, I gave it a 3. It's pretty solidly in the middle. It's not terrible, but it's nothing fantastically that you're going to write home to mom about either. It's serviceable. So, right smack in the middle.
Okay.
What about you, Phil?
I gave it a 2. There's some gun battles. There's the two big kind of gun action sequences that, you know, there's explosions, but I felt like weren't super compelling. The final fight at the end, that's kind of where a lot of these movies make their you know, kind of big crescendo, and that was such a letdown. Neither is able, you know, I'm not convinced that dollar store Kid Rock can beat up Van Damme, and Van Damme's just, you know, kind of pulling the sandbag and rolling on the ground, really acting super hurt, even though he's like twice the size of this dude. And again, no splits, no jump kicks, no nothing. So I was a little bit disappointed in the action quality. This thing is not, you know, it's not a great action movie. So I'm not going to award it very much on the action points.
We don't know that yet. We haven't finished the kick-ass. It may be a fantastic action movie.
Sean, where'd you get it, buddy? What'd you rank this at?
I'm going to round us out by also kind of being on the same page as Kyle. I gave this a 3, and I feel like I was being generous with that.
Same.
I think over the last 2 weeks, it was a little bit lower on the action scale in general in terms of the amount that was happening. So I think that may have weighted a little bit into this. And the fact that this was just almost it wasn't constant action, but there was a lot more going on all the time. Mm-hmm. I think maybe it skewed it a little bit higher to me. I feel like I could go a 2.5, but I'm going to stay steady at a 3. So that, I feel like we're feel pretty good on that. Next category is antagonist. We know that that is a very important part of action movies, and this has a maximum score of 4. Phil, why don't we start with you on this? What did you think of our antagonist? And you can take from that whatever you will.
These guys suck. There's nothing compelling or interesting about the Hogans. I know almost nothing about the Heathens. I'm annoyed that the Hogans and the Heathens sound similar, so I get them mixed up. Antagonists do a lot to raise the floor of your movie, of your action movie. You know, I think the action hero creates the ceiling. I think the antagonist creates the floor. They can really set the tone of a good action movie, and these guys really, really kind of let down the movie. I give them a 0. I think it's just completely a fumble on the bad guys.
Yeah. What about you, Kyle?
I mean, Phil nailed it. I didn't differentiate at all. I also gave him a 0. These guys are totally lame. They don't fight. I wanted to give it maybe 1 because I did recognize the middle brother from some stuff, but that's not enough to make him a good antagonist. He sucked. So
he
dissed Rhonda's boobs, dog. What a jerk.
I did feel, I think his name is Silas Weird, the actor. I did feel like he, and he has like the best IMDb page, the biggest, most robust.
I've seen him in a lot.
He brought it better than the other two brothers, but not enough to really make me care.
To be fair, I don't think he dissed Rhonda's beards, boobs. He actually complimented, just said that Dottie's were better. Bigger, a little firmer. Boys, I'm also giving this a 0.
Nice.
These, I can tell you the names of all of the brothers, the dad. I have that going for me, that I can tell the two different things apart. You had Matt, Jesse, Petey, and then Ramsey's the dad, right? That's cool. I can tell you a couple of the names of the other one, Ivy, Isles, whatever. They do nothing. They are, for the last 2 weeks, we've compared the antagonist to some sort of superhero comic book villain, whether it be the Penguin or like some of Joker's lackeys. These guys, like, they don't even come close to that. Like, Joker's lackeys are taking dumps on these guys. Mm-hmm. These guys, it's just sad.
It really like, does feel sad. Like, it really does feel like Mom and her three sons from Futurama. Like, it,
yeah.
Ramsey and his three boys have the exact same energy.
Like, what is the Burgle Bros or whatever?
The Beagle Brothers.
From Scrooge McDuck? The Beagle Boys? Oh, yeah. Like, those guys are harder than these guys.
Yeah, true.
Okay. So that's a big old fat goose egg for me as well. All right. And now I think we're going to go a little bit higher on this for the next category. Kyle, this is going to be going back to you.
Sure.
Body count. On
body
a scale
count
of a tops of 3. Mm-hmm. What's you toss in this movie?
I mean, we've all got our arbitrary rules. For me, I really start looking for anything good above 10. This one does get up to 17. I was pretty impressed, man. I gave this 3. I gave this a max on the body count scale. It hit him, so.
Okay.
That's all I got, boys. There's a lot of bodies.
What about you, Phil? What'd you got?
So, bit of a pet peeve of mine is you're watching the slam dunk contest during All-Star Weekend, and people are giving out 9s and 10s for these pedestrian dunks, and then when someone does something truly spectacular, there's no way to differentiate. And so I want to be like the Russian judges for body count, and 17, it's a good number, it's a decent number, but when you look at True Lies, when you look at Commando, when you look at some of these like Hallmark action movies that literally have body counts near or over 100, I'm going to put that as my benchmark for a 3, which means I'm going to give this one a 1. I think, you know, there are bodies, there are kills, but it's not Van Damme mowing down dozens of mooks. Schwarzenegger mowing down dozens of mooks. It's, you know, there are a few enough bodies in this that we can physically keep count of them, which means that's just not enough for me. I need more. I need you to up it.
The man has a bloodlust.
I need more bodies. Man,
when you put it that way, okay. So one of the perks of being the one that kind of just like asks the other people is I can kind of pivot here on my thing. I'll say I originally had down 3, and after hearing your reasoning there, like internally in my brain, I do have to kind of pivot. It isn't going to pivot as low as yours is. I'm going from a 3 to a 2.
Okay.
And the reason for that is I think that is right. And while you were talking, I was thinking in my head, well, what's the difference between, you know, 7 people that don't matter versus 80 people that don't matter? Well, about 73 people that don't matter. So that's a lot of bodies. That's a lot of bullets that are being put out there. And I think for an action movie, that is very much so in the spirit of it. So at most, I can give this a 2. We are coming from a couple of movies that, like, not a lot of people died. So if I gave those 1s, like, well, I can't justify giving this a 1.
That's fair.
You know?
I thought I was correct in this, and I just verified it. And my... I judge most of these against Die Hard, which Die Hard has a body count of 10, which is, you know, it's not the most, but that's why I kind of shoot for 10 to get a good amount. And then I judge just from there. So,
okay.
I totally agree with your guys' again, that's what I love about the individual scores, that we all have our own reasonings. And I totally see Phil's point is that, you know, you do want a lot of bodies in some of these, like Commando. They go hard. Hard Lies, he go hard.
Yeah. Okay. So also though, I will, okay, real quick tangent. If we were talking about Die Hard, what is your kill count rating or death count rating on this? On that?
Again, I'd say I would count Die Hard as the average. So I'd give it like a 1 or a 2, like in our scale. Again, because it's 10. I want to see at least 10 in a movie. Let me say like that. To get on the board, let's see 10.
I will posit that even though that only has 10, it's 10 very impactful.
They are very good kills. Yeah, sure.
Very impactful,
but I'm just saying,
instead of faceless deaths.
Yeah. We're just going on body count, too. Yeah. We all have our own justifications. It's okay.
No, I love that. Okay. Setting and theme. This has a maximum score of 3. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start this one off so I can't pivot. I gave this a 1.
Wow. Okay.
A big old 1. This was very low on the scale for me. It visually, it's nothing to write home about. It is just in the middle of the desert. The theme, it's fun. If anything, like if I had characters in here, this would be off the charts, like the world building in the characters themselves. But other than that, this just feels like cardboard set after cardboard set filled with the people that make it work. So I give setting and theme personally a 1.
Okay.
I'll shoot it over to, that was Kyle, Phil. Kyle, it's Phil's turn.
I also gave it a 1. I mean, it exists. It's an old UFO tourist town in the desert. There's a military base nearby. There's a quarry where I guess you can dump bodies with abandon, I guess.
Nobody checks.
It does tie into the one entry on plot holes in on IMDb, which I feel needs to be read with a side lisp to really capture the thought on this. Despite the myth about how hot the desert is, it's quite cold at night, and the hut that Six Toes lives in is wide open on the sides. Not only would this be very stupid, but he could also freeze to death, and so would Van Damme's character. And there's no indication that he has another house, so this is a mistake.
very, very, very good Simpsons dork.
Yeah, so...
I hope somebody got fired for that blunder.
For that alone, he's got an open-air house on the desert. He should be frozen to death. 1. Yeah.
I thought for sure you were going to talk about, you mentioned the quarry that you can just dump bodies over.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to talk about somebody on IMDb being like, yet, despite the investigation that people disappeared, nobody decided to look over the quarry and find all 28 bodies.
Yeah.
Also, they were all perfectly wrapped in saran wrap, so they're not decomposing and going to the elements.
It's just fresh they're bodies. They're actually very well
preserved.
My wife was asking Kyle. About that. She's like, why is, like, don't you want these bodies to actually decompose? And, like, this is just going to keep them fresh for, it's like nothing's gonna get into them.
It's determined that nobody in town gives a fuck.
Yeah,
so like, who are you hiding this from?
Also true. Yeah.
Setting and theme, what you got, baby?
Setting and theme. Again, I love this movie. I think he was a little more generous. I gave it a 2 because I feel, you know, it's a desert town, but it nails the desert town aesthetic. Like, it worked for me. I would have liked to have seen more. I feel the desert town could have been a character in of itself, but it nailed the isolation. I bought in. I gave it a 2. It wasn't perfect, but yeah, it worked.
All right. Now we're getting into the categories that are, well, honestly, the ones that we care about. Muscles. Honestly, this should be have a higher ceiling, but it doesn't. It's only got a 2 because last minute thinking. 2. Total of 2. Kyle, what you giving this bad boy?
I'm giving this one a 1. We really only see Van Damme. We do see him in his full musculature glory, but even on his best day, Van Damme is no Stallone or no Schwarzenegger. He can be fit, he can be cut, but he ain't jacked, he ain't bulk. So again, I give it a 1. He's got a good looking bod, but he's also the only one we see. None of the henchmen are threatening or buff or intimidating, so it's really kind of a letdown. Could have honestly gone 0.5 on this one, but I'm being generous because it's JCVD. He's getting a 1.
So I gave him a 1 as well. This is actually the biggest I've seen Van Damme. He's, you know, normally he plays a very kind of a lithe and dexterous muscular body. He's jacked in this, and he makes sure you get to see 95% of his body in this. But again, like you said, there's no one else. Like, I need a blood sport where you've got a Bolo Young, you've got a bunch of different combatants, a bunch of different people that are showing off the goods, and I need more than just Van Damme. He can't carry this alone, so he gets a 1 for me.
I couldn't have said it better, guys. There's not much more that I can add to this. I also gave this a 1, and JCVD earns every bit of that 1. To me, the other 1 has to be coming from somewhere else, whether it be I need to see him fighting something that's actually imposing instead of 30 scrawny guys that are just, okay, they're intimidating because they're bikers. Nah, this is an action movie. I want to see some juiced up, roided out guys who just got out of the gym and they've been there for 2 months straight. Like, give me something. You got Schwarzenegger movies who are going against bodybuilders in guerrilla warfare outfits.
Yeah.
You know, like, give me the meat. 1, and it will thank me for it. Phil, butts.
There's 2 butts. There's 2 points.
There is 2 points for butts. How many butts?
This gets full butts. This is the first full category for me. Well done. And just like the way the scene is shot where she disrobes and you see her butt and then it switches to the back of him and he disrobes. And it's probably the best scene in the movie, and I can't give it anything less than a perfect score.
Kyle.
Agree. I was ready to give it the 1 butt when she was in the shower, and I was like, are we going to see topless? And we did. And I love that she's doing the awkward stance where she's got the left leg weirdly forward so you can't see the mons pubis region. But then, we get butt, and then we get Jean-Claude Van Damme butt, where it's almost worth a bonus point if we had that in this category. It's not, but it's got the full 2, baby. Double cheeks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The only thing missing out of this, I obviously also gave this a two. Like, it was almost getting a two just for Eli's cute little thing and that red little getup. Freaking Grandpa Joe butt over there. Jesus Christ. I mean, between Muscles and this, like, the only unanswered question is whether or not he's circumcised, and I don't really care to know.
Never get confirmation.
He's European. I would imagine JCVD is not cut.
I would assume so as well.
Just on the assumption.
Speaking to the European side of things, this is one of those rare movies where we don't get a shoehorned in explanation as to why there's this Belgian dude in the American West.
True. True.
So, none. I thought that was interesting.
None. A Western movie, like this Western tale. Oh, it's ridiculous.
Not even like ridiculous. a vaguely French last name like Thibodeau or something. He could have been like Eddie.
Eddie Lomax is the whitest white name that's ever been assigned to Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Like Lomax, like Eddie Lomax, he could have like grown up with six toes. You know, it's out there. Music. Maximum of two. Kyle, where are you leaning?
I may be too biased, fellas. This also got a max two from me. I was bopping along. It was cheesy. It was 80s doubt. It was 90s doubt. I had a good time with it. It all worked for me, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a shocker to me after what you gave last week.
I know. It's very weird, but the whole time I was watching, and again, maybe I was just in a good mood, but I vividly remember I was like, man, this soundtrack is hitting. I had to give it a two.
Interesting.
Man, Phil, I am so curious as to what you gave this after hearing that. That just like, that was out of left field for me.
Big old goose egg. I thought it was generic, forgettable, the generic kind of Western guitar twang didn't really do anything for me. I couldn't remember a single riff from this movie, so... I gave it nothing, no points.
That sounds a little bit more right. I gave this a 0.5, and I only gave this a 0.5 due to the fact I watch everything with closed captioning, and the closed captionings for all of the music bits made me laugh very hard. Like, there was this twangy guitar going on, and right down on the bottom, it was like smooth flute. I'm like, no, that's an electric guitar going on right now. That is not a flute. And then it almost felt like it was a recurring joke, because the entire movie, when it wasn't a flute, it just kept saying smooth flute. I'm like, no, no, it's not.
I gotta watch this again with captions on, which I will do.
That is the maximum that I'm giving that.
I want to show so many people this fucking movie. You guys have no idea.
Is this so your new hyped Samurai Cop? Just Western?
One of them, yeah. It's up there.
Nice.
It's so bad good. I can't wait to watch it with Mandy. But
all right, we're in the home stretch here. Quips. Maximum of one. What you got, Kyle?
I gave this a one. There's a lot of good quips in here. Jean-Claude Van Damme, even with his accent, is going to drop some bangers on some people. He might not write them, but he'll deliver them very woodenly. But they were quips, man. I got to give him one.
Right on. What about you, Phil?
Oh, yeah. Full one score from me. Mrs. Howard steals the show, whether she's talking about getting her husband's Depends or that he's spreading joy to the people while he's having sex or that she doesn't think he's a rapist. And then you got Jubal Early talking about how much pussy he thinks he gets.
Yep.
It's just, I can just name all these things off. It's, I will say all of it feels incredibly out of place. Like, but the timing is often really, really good, but it's very discordant with what I feel the movie was trying to be. And it reeks of Van Damme having his hands all over this. And I will kind of use this to talk about a 6-episode miniseries that I watched with my wife recently called Jean-Claude Van Johnson, that the premise is that he plays himself, except it's a fictionalized version of himself where he has used his acting career as kind of a mask of sorts, because he's actually a international spy who uses his acting to get into different countries and perform espionage and that sort of thing. And the whole thing is very similar to this in that it has no idea if it wants to be action or drama or comedy or romance. It is all over the place. I do recommend you guys check it out. It shares a lot of the same kind of tonal quality as Desert Heat.
I'm checking it out then.
Also does not, it does not know what it wants to be. And that I feel is just indicative of the Van Damme experience when he is behind a movie and controlling what we see. So one for quips, full score.
I've heard of that, and it's definitely something that I want to check out. That sounds right up my alley. You guys nailed it. I think the best quips in this movie came from people that weren't Jean-Claude Van Damme. It was literally everybody else that just had these completely... I mean, they're all self-serving to Jean-Claude Van Damme. And I think things that were said that would just pop him or make him laugh. And, you know, it made me laugh. Like, there were so many times where it's so out of left field. But it makes this movie just seem and feel like more of a cartoon. And sometimes I'm just here for that in some action movie. It doesn't take itself seriously at all. And, like, the Depends line, like, why was in... If you gave me 100 guesses whether or not there was going to be a line about Depends diapers in this movie... 100 times out of 100, I'd say no. Would not have gotten that it was going to be in this movie at all. I never would have gotten there. It's a full one. I wish I could go higher than that. I can't. But that does lead us to, I was just talking about how cartoony this is. Our last quarter category is story. It must be a 0 or 1, no 0.5s or anything in between. I'll just end this by saying this gets a 1 for me. There's a story there. The story is all over the place. It starts as some vengeance thing to get back a motorcycle that's stolen and he was attemptedly murdered, whatever, and then turns into, it doesn't know what it turns into, but it's there. It has a beginning, a middle, an end, and it's all over the place, everywhere in between. You guys remember the shirts that people wore in high school or middle school that just had a coyote howling at the moon?
Yeah. I have 3 of them.
Okay, this movie is that shirt. Like, that's all I could think of is that this movie is that shirt. Just wrapped up in a neat little bow and just put on the screen. It's so weird. And I can't believe I just said anything about this movie was neat. Phil, what you giving this for story?
You could have stopped when you said must be 0. I gave it a 0. I feel like if you're... director is so embarrassed by the final product that he has to have his name taken off of it that I can't give you a 1. It is Yojimbo. It is one of the most classically told Western stories out there. I did watch an hour of it before getting too tired and having to turn it off, but go check out the original. It is on Max if you subscribe to that. I'm sure you can find it plenty of places elsewhere. It's a great movie. I was very surprised. It was the first time I'd ever seen a Kurosawa movie. The music in that is crazy and good, and the whole, like, the action, the hero from that is amazing. I love the dude. But yeah, this one, I get what it was going for, but I just don't think that it got there, so I'm not gonna give it a point.
Completely fair. Kyle,
Phil answered everything I want to say. I love this movie, but I'm not splitting hairs. This movie had 0 story, dog. Big goose. Nothing. This movie went nowhere. Nothing happened. Completely ineffective. Love the shit out of it.
I'm not backing down from my 1. Back to your guys' decision.
We have a bonus category.
We do. Sean.
We do have a bonus category, which is the dope weapon bonus point. I have nothing to bring to the table on this, but I do leave the floor open to you guys.
I could make an argument for the gas tank grenade combo, but I still feel it's kind of lazy and not overall super unique. So I gave a 0 for bonus weapon.
That's fair. I used this as an opportunity to award a movie that I wasn't giving good scores for, but I still enjoyed. So I gave it a point for the grenade gas tank booby trap and for death by venomous viper. Rest in peace, Berserko. Okay. So it gets a point from me.
Okay.
Okay. Well, boys.
Final scores. Yeah.
This brings us to the end in our final score on the kick-assometer to rate this action movie. So, Kyle, on a scale of 0 to 23, what rating does this movie have for you as an action movie?
So, all combined up, this is the highest ranking one we've done so far on the kick-assometer for me. This gets a 14.
Nice.
Wow.
So, as non-action movie as it is, and as bad a movie as it is, it's the highest ranking one we've had yet, and I fucking love this movie. So again, thank you, Phil.
Fascinating. You are welcome. I'm actually going to go next because I would love to leave the honors of the last one for the guest of honor and the JCVD expert here. This is actually my lowest scoring one of the month. At 11.5 out of 23. It initially was a tad bit higher, but going last and being able to adjust it a little bit due to some reasoning from you guys.
Shenanigans!
It did end up a little bit lower, so hey, I'll pencil whip it. Whatever. Yeah. Phil, this is a JCVD movie. You have seen this before. You knew what you're getting into. Watching it with the eyes of someone who has the kick-ass-ometer at your disposal. Where does this rate for you?
Weirdly enough, as the person who suggested we watch this and recommended we watch this and enjoyed watching it, my total came out to a 9 out of 23. Which sounds like it's a terrible score, because it is 39%, which weirdly matches close to the Rotten Tomatoes audience score of 35. So I feel I'm pretty spot on there. But seriously, go watch this movie if you haven't seen it.
Honestly, I think 35's a decent Rotten Tomatoes score for a movie that I know I will enjoy.
Yeah. It got a 0 from a critic score out of 6 reviewers. None of them recommended it. So,
wow.
But it's dumb, but it's all over the place, and it's a fun watch. Go watch it. It's worth your time.
I do think it's wild that this was my lowest rated one on this ranking system, but it is the one that I enjoyed the most. And at like an hour and 36 minutes, it flew by the fastest.
Agree.
Yeah.
It ruled. Boys. I watched it twice, man. I want to watch it again. I'm going to this weekend.
Yeah.
That's the highest praise I can give.
I can't wait to watch it again. I will say Sarah joined for like the last half an hour of this movie. And boy, oh boy, was I embarrassed at how stupid this movie was. By the end, I'm like, sorry, you had to sit through that. She goes, what, through this movie with the amazing script writing and this incredible acting? Why would you say that?
Boys, also, holy fuck, it's almost 2-hour episode.
Woo, we did it again.
Deal with it.
Yeah, as it will be. But Phil, thank you so much for coming on. It is always a blast. I cannot wait for the next movie to see, because inevitably it's just going to be another movie that I've never seen before. So it's always fun for me.
We love you, Phil. Merry half Decembermas action movie Christmas.
Merry half December action movie Christmas to you both. I love you both.
All right, stick around, listeners, for the Would You Rather at the end of the show, as always. And until then, Kyle, what can the listeners go do?
They can go Jewball themselves. Phil.
Yes.
If you were a very, very depressed soldier on the run from his past in the middle of the desert, mm-hmm. would you rather do two chicks at the same time or get your feet rubbed by your heterosexual best friend?
Okay, real quick, while Phil thinks about this, I want you, what you just said, that entire thing right there, that is a one in story.
Ah, come on.
Okay. Two chicks at the same time is two chicks at the same time, but I feel that's very fleeting. That is it's not an experience that stays with you. That's a one-night stand. A sensual hetero foot rub from a very good friend, you know, that shows that you have a bond. Who am I kidding? It's two chicks at the same time. Like,
two chicks at the same time, Peter.
Fucking A, man.
Yes! Yes! Phil, oh we love God. You, buddy. Thank love you so both, fucking guys. Much, man.
Yeah, thank you Later, so much guys. For having me on here. I was happy to share in this experience with you once again.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.